Boker Tov world. Today's Dafin Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Daf Ayin. Phew, can't believe it. It's almost like we just started and we're already on Daf Ayin. My gosh, scary thing. Okay, so we've been talking about, until now, we've been talking about the idea of the Uber that was Mertzias Yodai, and what the din would be legabe treifus. But what about if the behema that is having this child is a cow that is giving birth to its bechor? What is the din of a bechor? Because remember, bechor, you don't have the options of cutting things up and throwing it out and so on, like we were talking about on Chulin, because you have an iser of even causing a mum to a bechor. And you're not allowed to just feed a bechor to the dogs. You can't make it dog food. And therefore, we've got an additional complication in this Mishnah where the child that is being born and is having this difficult problem in the delivery is a bechor. So can you actually perform an embryotomy where you have to cut up the embryo in order to save the mother and to be able to take out the pieces piece by piece? What's the din there? So how about if this is a mivakeret? A mivakeret means an animal that's having its firstborn, so it's about to have a bechor. As long as it is still in the womb, mechatech ever ever, you can cut each piece of the uber as it's born, and you can even throw it to the dogs, mashlich leklavim. So even though ein podinas akotchim la'achilam leklavim, we don't make a pidyon on kachim and do such a thing, but over here, the kedusha was never chal, because remember that the halacha is built on peterechem la'ashem, and this peterechem means that there needs to be a bechor that is an entire animal, because it says kol ha'bechor asher yivale takshit. And therefore, in this case, it's not yet a bechor. So as it comes out, you can cut it up and you can even feed it to the dogs. It has no kedusha whatsoever. But once it was yatsa ruba, if there was a rove, this doesn't mean rove of individual pieces, as we're going to talk about, but if there was a rove of the entire uber that came out, that's a lida. And at that moment, it's a bechor. And it has the kedusha of a bechor in the sense that obviously you can't do anything with it. It's not mutter to be used in any way. So hareze yikaver, you're going to have to bury it because you can't actually eat it and do anything with it. And the bechor was kodesh at that point. You're not allowed to feed it to the dogs. And therefore, you're also supposed to bury it. That's a push it, why you're supposed to bury it, because the din that ein ma'achilas haklavim as a kachim b'klavim doesn't mean it's an iser hano. It means it's an iser for you to do something that's mevazeh. But why does it say you need to bury it, which is mashma, not mashma, which is clearly means that it's aser b'hano? So that just discusses this, and we're going to see later on the shita when we get to Bechor, is the sheet of Rabbi Akiva that indeed would hold that in this case it would be Asubana. We'll talk about that in the sugya of Bechor. But here we're talking about the question of the point at which something is considered to be Yalud, which is why we discuss this here instead of in Bechorot. This is a continuation of defining what Yalud is. Itma. So what about a situation like this? A Bechor was Yotze, one-third of it. Now, one-third is not called born, and therefore it doesn't have the kedusha of the bechor. You want to get out of the problem of having a bechor, which is a heck of a problem, because obviously, you know, Bisman has said, for sure it's a problem. What are you going to have to wait until somebody is nichshel in it? And what can you do with it? So therefore, what you do is you sell it to a guy. And that way, even if it's just a small proportion, even if there's Yad Ha'akum is Shayich Bo, it's not going to be Kadosh B'Kadosh's Bechor. Again, we'll learn about all of those dinim when we get to Bechoros. But what you did over here is after the first third came out, so it's not yet Kadosh B'Bechor, right? So you call up your business friend and you say, listen, you know, I need you to buy a piece of an animal. It's okay, so you sell it. You sell a right to some of it to a guy. So what's the din? After the next shlish comes out, now you have a rove, we have a machlokas, whether the sale is actually a correct sale because it was yours at the time, or do we say that the process of birth actually is something, it's like shechita. The first part of the shechita would be treifas, right? But once you do the shechita, now the entire act is seen as the act of shechita from the beginning. But the same thing is true over here, Steiner's Rav Huna, because as the Bechor is born, the entire process is now seen. Oh, you mean it was a birth? Well, if it was a birth, then this is a Bechor, which means it was a Bechor from the beginning, once it turns out to have been born at the end, you see? So according to Rav Huna, when you sold it, essentially we now understand that you sold something you didn't own, because it was a Bechor, and it was Kaddish at that point. Therefore, the sale is null and void, and this has the full Kedusha of the Bechor. So Rav Huna Amar Kadosh, forget about that sale. And Rabbah says, no. And no kadosh, because it only becomes a bechor from this point on. So Rav Huna Omar kadosh, it's because he holds kasav lemafreya kadosh. It now turns out that the entire process was retroactively understood. Doesn't mean it's the chal kedusha from the beginning. It's like we now understand that what we were looking at was the late of the bechor. So for all intents and purposes, it's retroactively kodesh. So once it's nafak leruba, it's now igloi milta. Igloi milta doesn't mean it's a chalot. Igloi milta means we now understand, and now becomes clear that this entire process was the process of the birth of a bechor, and therefore mi kara havi kodesh. In which case, my dezavin, what this guy sold, wasn't his. Which, of course, lokalum zavin. How did he sell something that wasn't his? Rabbah, on the other hand, says, no, it's not kodesh, because he holds kasavar mikan olahaba kadosh, that the leda of the bechor creates the kedusha at the point that it's considered to be yolud, which is the rove, and therefore what was sold before, maidis oven shapir zavin. So since it was a proper sale, this is a bechor that yada akum be'emza, and in which case there's no kedusha because there's a goy that is a part owner. Now, actually, this is a machlokas that has other implications, and Rav Huna and Rabbah argued about those other implications based on this same svara, even though it comes out with opposite piske halachas because of the context, but it's the same svara. Because look, ozdu l'tamayu, both Rav Huna and Rabbah are consistent over here, because we also have another machlokas between them, which was where Yotza Shlish Derech Dofen. Suppose, in order to save the mother, they performed a cesarean section on this Bechor, and what they had to do is they had essentially ended up without being able to complete the birth. So one-third ended up coming out through the normal channel, the normal birth channel. So that one-third they had cut, they weren't able to get out the rest. They performed an emergency cesarean, took out another third, obviously cutting up the embryo, and it came out through the cesarean, derech dofen, and then another third came out, which was after the cesarean. They were able to pull out naturally. So you had two-thirds coming out derech dofen, and then one-third came out, one-third derech dofen, and two-thirds was a normal vaginal delivery. So there Rav Huna says, well, I say it's not kodesh, whereas Rabbah says it is kodesh. And this turns out, surprisingly, to be the same machlokas, even though in this case it's they reverse their shitas. And Rav Huna is the one who says it's not. And that turns out to be important, that this is a reversal of shitas, because it's the reason that we need to know both of these machlokas. And let's explain the machlokas. Rav Huna says, look, it's not kodesh because this is Rav Huna's consistent shita, Rav Huna l'taymi. Since Rav Huna holds l'mafreya kadosh, so if that's the case, it's the birth process has to be a process of the leda of the bechor. In which case, if he says that we're looking at determining the bechor that becomes the bechor at that moment, that it was the peter rechem. So then basically what Rav Huna is saying is that when the first rove as it's being born. The first part is the rov. At that point, it's a petarechem, and then it's considered to be a bechor. But in this case, the first part of the birth, which means the part that had the rov in it, was not a vaginal delivery, and it included a part that was actually a caesarean. And that caesarean obviously is not a petarechem, and therefore there's no kedusha, because it was all one process from the beginning. So this follows from Rav Huna's assuming that the birth process is a process, and it's not a question of a point, and therefore the entire process is the process of Aledas and Bechor. That led him to the conclusion that the sale that you had made in the previous case was not a good sale, because now the process from the beginning was the process of Aledas Bechor. But in this case, it leads to the opposite conclusion, because if it's a process, then obviously the point in which we determine that the rov has been delivered, that's got to be the point in which the process now reaches its conclusion. But in this case, it doesn't have a rov that was actually a petarechem, and therefore it doesn't become a bechor. So the ruba kama lete berechem, the first rov, first moment that you reach a rov, that was not coming as a petarechem. The fact that ultimately, if you look at the what's the proportion that came vaginally and what's the proportion that came through the caesarean, yes, I understand that that's in terms of the entire thing, but I don't deal with the entire thing. I deal with the process. Masha Enkein Rabba, who says, no, it's not a question of a process. It's where you have a rov that was delivered derech rechem, then that becomes the bet derechem. So according to Rabba, ultimately, we end up with a regular bechor over here, right? So Rabba is l'shitasa, because Rabba omer kadosh, again, in this case, it's an inversion of what he said before, but that's because of what we're dealing with. This is Rabba l'shitato. Since Rabba holds that it's only at whatever point it is that we have the rov that makes it a bechor. So according to him, at that point, look, bottom line is, if you take a look at the entire birth, ruba derech rechem nafik, the entire birth was essentially a vaginal rov, and therefore it's considered to be a bechor, which is petarechem. So what's the problem? So why do we need both of these machlokas then? Well, now you understand why. Because basically, since in one case the shita, the sephora leads you to a kula, and in the other case the sephora leads you to a chumra, so we have to know that both Rav Huna and Rabba are certain of their ma'amad. They're not just being mekel, they're not just being machmir, in which case in the other case they would be machmir in the other direction. That's why we need both machlokasin. Because if we only knew about the case that we brought up over here in our mission, Yashmina Baha, I would have said, yes, in our case, you know why Rav Huna said that it's Kodesh Bebechora, and he says, cancel that sale because it wasn't yours. That's because, essentially, if he would have said otherwise, it would have been a kula. But in this case, we're actually saying that it would be Kodesh, like Rabba, would be a Chumra, maybe it would be Moda to Rabba, that it, we look at it not as a process. We take a look at the roof, and vice versa as well. If I had only known this case that we just discussed, the case about whether the partial Caesarean and partial Derech Rechem case there, I would have said, well, okay, I understand why Rabba says in that case that it's Kodesh. Because, look, he says that because that's a Chumrah. Mashenkin, in the other case, if I hadn't known it, the case of our Mishnah, there I would have said maybe he'd be motivated to Rav Huna, that we should go L'chumrah and say it's a Bechor and cancel the sale. And therefore, we need to know that both Rabba and Rav Huna are clear about their psak. They're not simply looking at what to do because we have a suffix of some kind. We paskin in both cases precisely according to the logic of the svara that led to it. Mr. Brucey, I know that good morning takes a lot out of you, Brucey, but, you know, we need you all along the way. You keep us going, man. And anyway, Richie showed up, and he needed a greeting. And he was very disappointed. That's why he didn't show his face. So, oh, look at this. He's ready.
Boker Tov, Richie.
There we go. He doesn't look happy at being back home. I don't know. Maybe he likes Sweden. Tanan asks the Gemara on Rav Huna. Tanan, Hamivakeret Hamikasher Lilin. Here's our Mishnah. It says over here, you can cut off each piece and throw it to the dogs, right? Now, doesn't that mean that you cut off each piece as it comes out, and you can even put it in the freezer to feed for your dog over the next couple of weeks? Doesn't it mean that? My love, Michatech Umeniach, that you can actually cut it, put it in the freezer, and take it out gradually and give it to your dogs. But if that's the case, if you hold it Lamafreyahu Kadosh, then how could you feed it to the dogs? You would have had to bury it. Because if what you're saying is that the rove over here would be a rove even if it had been cut up in pieces, so since according to Rav Huna, ultimately it became the rove, at that moment the entire process should have been usher, and then you wouldn't have been allowed to take any pieces out of the freezer because now it was a glowing milta l'mafreya that the first piece that you cut off was a pechor. So how could Rav Huna hold l'mafreya hu kadosh if the Mishnah says you can feed it to the dogs? And, I mean, obviously Rav Huna will say, it doesn't mean you can put it in the freezer. It means you can cut and feed. But the moment that it would get to the rove, enachinami, would become usher and would have to be a mikaver. So, wait a minute. But then if that's true, Rav Huna, so then what would be the din if you put it in the freezer? What are you saying? That if you cut off each piece as it came out, put it in the freezer, what would the halacha be? That at the moment that you had the rove, you would say that the din is that it has to be buried. So then why doesn't the Mishnah say that? Instead of the Mishnah going to the case of where the rove came out, oh, then you need to bury it. And the next, that animal, the next one born, is not a bechor anymore because it's niftara min habechora. It's already, the peterechem was already a peterechem that wasn't kodesh. The next one that's born is not the peterechem. I forgot to explain that in the Mishnah, sorry. So instead of taking that case as the contrasting case, adatana seifa, yotza rubo yikaver v'niftara min habechora, you don't need that it should be yotza rubo all at one time. You could have said in the Mishnah, when do we say that you're allowed to feed it to your dog? That's only if you fed it as you cut it. So you should have said, Liflok velitne bididei. Bamed varim amurim, when do we say this halacha that each one can be fed to the dogs? That's only if you're feeding it to the dogs as you're cutting it. B'mechatech u'mashlich ever ever. But if, in fact, you had been mechatech and you had put it into the freezer, the moment that you ended up with rove, the entire thing would have become aser because the goloi milta l'mafrei, according to Rav Huna, that it was a bechor from before and it would require kvura. Why didn't the Mishnah say that? Why did the Mishnah say when all of it is yolud? Well, says Rav Huna, that is what it's saying. I mean, to anyone with brains, I mean, because that's basically, according to me, that's the way to understand the Mishnah. That's what it means. Look, what does the Mishnah mean? If you were mechatech u'meniach, that's the equivalent of yotza rubo, and at that point it needs to be ikaver. I mean, that's, according to me, that's the obvious meaning of things, because when you're talking about yotza rubo, it doesn't mean yotza rubo all at once. It's the equivalent of yotza rubo. That's what the Mishnah says. Once it was actually yotza rubo, which doesn't matter to me if you're mechatech or meniach or you're mechatech and mashlech. I mean, the point is the yotza rubo is that same point. Boy, Rav. Now, the question is, the same issues that we had raised, benogea, the elements of tarfus and so on, we have the same issues, benogea, the concept of leda. So, holchu be'evarim achar harov, o lo holchu be'evarim achar harov. Do we look at, here we've made this big deal, that there's a concept of rove of the organism, right? So when most of this uber has been born, so then that is what gives it its din of yolud. But would a single organ also have a din of rove or not? In terms of what? What's your question? Hechidami. Was the question that you've got basically a rove of the organism as a whole, but you only have that rove where, let's say, the first third of a leg was actually out of the womb. So including that first third of the leg, we now have a rove of the entire uber, right? Is that your question? I mean, you're asking, essentially, let me point out to you, that, I mean, this is what you're asking. You're asking whether the miut avroi, the little part of the leg that is outside of the womb, do we look at that as part of the leg, in which case most of the leg is still behind and has not been delivered, or do we look at it as being part of the entire organism and we should go according to the rove of the uber and not look at the fact that the rove of the aver would pull this miut of the aver back, so to speak, halachically? I mean, I don't think that's much of a question, is it? You're asking whether high miut of aroi, do we go according to the rove of the aver and view it as still not being delivered, or do we look at rove of the organism? I mean, pshita, isn't it obvious? We're not going to ignore the more imperative, the greater imperative of the organism as a whole that defines its rove based on the fact that one particular leg or arm is rove in. I mean, why would we look at the rove of the individual organ when we've got an entire organism that defines the rove in another way? So pshita, de lo shafkina ruba de uber, viazlina bunsa rove aver, isn't it sort of obvious that we wouldn't reject the rove that is of the whole uber and say, well, but you don't have that rove because you have a rove of the aver? Doesn't make much of a sense. So I imagine that what your question is this. It's talking about over here, where let's say you had precisely, now listen, gentlemen, we're going to be dealing with a lot of laboratory situations, meaning these are never, whenever we get to the issues that are really fundamental, we can't actually set up an experiment. We do thought experiments because there's no way that any of these the things that we're going to be discussing could actually happen. In terms of our knowledge that we've got precisely one half, we're going to have insane cases coming up, which are really laughable if you try to imagine them actually happening. They're just funny. But we're not interested in the actual case. Remember that when Chazal do thought experiments, the thought experiments are there in order to establish the principle. They're not there because they're practical at all, like most thought experiments, right? So let's imagine a case where you have exactly one half. All right, so magically we found out exactly one half was born, but that one half included the rove of one of its feet, right? So now the question is, can we include this lesser part, the miut of that foot, and say, ah, but if you go according to the rove, then most of this foot is out, so let's look at the entire foot as being out, and once the entire foot is out, so now we have a rove. That's what you're asking. So, the little bit that's left inside of the rechem, can we view it as having come out together with the rove of the aver that is out? That was your question. Okay, so I think our Mishnah provides a solution. Tashma. The Mishnah says, Yotze Rubon, Hareza Yikaver. If most of it, what do you mean by most of it? My ruba. You mean literally most of the entire organism? Most of this uber has come out? I need a Mishnah to tell me that we go according to the rove? You need to have this Mishnah on Daf Ayin and Chulin after learning all of Shas up until this point, and you never heard that there's a din of a rove. Man, you've been paying a heck of a lot of attention to the Daf Yomi, haven't you? We've got 10,000 roves. What do we need this Mishnah for? So you're telling me ad hashta lo hashmina the ruba kukul? So you never heard this before. So we absolutely have got to have this Mishnah here. That's crazy. Elalav, that can't be the case. So what is the case that the Mishnah is coming to address? Elalav kagonchi yotza chetzio barov eva. Must be that what the Mishnah means is a chiddush. The case is which the case that we raised. You have exactly half, and because you have rove of this particular aver, we continue to look at the entire aver as being born, and that's when it's telling me that's also considered to be a rove. Now, that would make sense. Isn't that what the Mishnah must be talking about? No. Come on. It doesn't have to be talking about that. I mean, it could be talking about the case that we rejected before. And maybe it just means, because, look, your only problem is, so what's the Mishnah telling us, you know? The Mishnah's telling us something, even if it's telling us the original way we understood Rava. Namely, that it's talking about where you have most of the Yotzer Rubo, and the Rubo included the Miut of an Aver, and it's telling me that that Miut of an Aver counts towards the Rubo because of the Rove of the Uber, and we don't say that it's not born yet because it was part of a Rove Aver. So before you said, well, that's obvious. It's obvious if you raise the issue. But if the Mishnah is coming to tell me a halacha about Rove, then there has to be some element in it that is going to teach me something that I didn't think of yet and I didn't discuss yet. Well, this is a case that I never thought of. You're right. It might be pshit and I could have figured it out. But it's certainly not just the Mishnah that's reviewing the din of Rove, right? So that would be the original case. Yotza Rubo B'miut Eiver. And that goof is the Chiddush of the Mishnah. The Kamash Malan, we don't actually reject the Rove of the entire organism in favor of the Rove of a particular Eiver. So therefore, you can't bring a Raya one way or the other to the way that we explained Rava's question. Now, question number two. And again, these are difficult to imagine actually happening. There are imaginary situations in which we are looking to establish a principle of the din, right? So now the question is like this. Suppose you wrapped up the fetus in a plastic bag before the delivery. So now it goes through the birth canal in a plastic bag. Is that considered to be a peter rechem, or is it considered to be like a chatzitza? So, I understand the peter rechem could mean the firstborn, the child that opened the womb of this mother, so to speak. But does it have to be literally a peter rechem? I mean, does it have to be in touch with the actual rechem, or is it just a poetic way of referring to a birth? This is the peter rechem. What's the difference if it's wrapped in a plastic bag? Now, if you're going to tell me that being wrapped in a plastic bag, I understand that that itself may be, something that is not part of any kind of birth. Who wraps a fetus in a bag? But what about if you're delivering this fetus, you know, and the farmer's got a glove on? How about that? So now there is a chatzitza because he's got the fetus in his glove. So betalito, if it means a beged of some kind. How about there? Or how about if the fetus was wrapped in the sack of the shilia, the amniotic sack? What would be the din then? What? That's a crazy question. That's normal births are that way. I mean, why would that be considered to be a chatzitza? Beshiliato or chayu, that is standard. Well, no, I don't mean it's wrapped in its own amniotic sac. I want to know what would be the din if it's wrapped in another fetus's amniotic sac. So how about that? So there is that considered to be part of birth, or look, this is not its own peter rechem. So what would be the din? B'shilya acheret mahu. I've got another question. So suppose this farmer, or we could be talking about a human, and we could be talking about a midwife over here, was karachato v'achazato. Suppose this woman who's delivering this child wraps the fetus in her arms to protect it and pulls it out of the womb. So that means that there was the arm of the midwife between the fetus and the womb. What about that? Would that be a bechor? Now, let's first understand what the case is. Are we talking about that the birth already began and the head has already emerged and now the midwife sticks her hand in around the fetus to pull it out like you would use, you know, a forceps, but here we don't use a forceps on the head. The head already came out. We don't never thought of using a forceps to crushing a head. So then if the head came out already, so then that's already a paterechem, petarte. What's the question? We said once it's yotze rosho, it's considered to be yolut. So what we're talking about over here was a malpresentation. It came out feet first. The midwife sticks her hands in order to be able to get the rest out, and it had gotten stuck, let's say, at the hip. And it was nafak derech margalotav, and now the woman's hands were around the head. What would be the din? Another crazy case. Let me ask you, what would be the din if a chulda sticks its hand into an animal and swallows the fetus and then vomits it back? What's the din? What do you mean? You said and takes it out? If it took it out, so it took it out. So then that means it bechlal. It never got anywhere near to the being a peterechem. Why is that any different than the question that you asked before? I mean, that's the ultimate plastic bag, isn't it? No, I mean, the chulda swallowed it, took it out, and then put it back in and vomited it back in. That's what I want to know. And then it came out in a normal delivery, the yotzimayelav. So over there, the question is the second yitzia, which was a normal peterechem, would that count then to make it a peterechem if we viewed the first one as having been in a plastic bag, not being a peterechem? So it's the same case, essentially, of taking this fetus, was delivered through a plastic bag, putting it back in and letting it come out without the plastic bag. So would that make it a peterechem or not? Or, let me ask you, let's say you put two animals back to back and you have the animal being delivering forces its fetus into the womb of the next animal. What would then be there? An insane case, obviously. But again, the question is, can one animal create a peterechem by forcing open the womb of another animal with its child as it's delivering it? So would it be a peterechem of the second animal as well? Mahu, didei patar, I understand. A fetus could be the opener of its own mother's womb. But could it, if in the case here where it forced open the womb of the next animal, would that also be a peterechem? Maybe de lav didei lo patar. It can't be a peterechem of a mother that's not its own. Or is this a purely mechanical halacha? So you see what we're asking over here. We go all the way from it's being pure poetry to being pure mechanics. And we say, peterechem, all we care about is that you forced open a cervix. That's all I care about. What's the difference? Whose cervix? How you forced it open? Plastic bags, whatever, right? So that's the question. Maybe you could even force open mechanically the cervix of another womb, another animal. So all of these, we don't have any clear-cut rayas. Boy, Rav Ach, I've got another question. When we're talking about Peter Rechem, does there need to be an actual contact with the real Rechem? So in other words, this thing has got to force open the cervix. Is that what we're talking about? Suppose Niftechu Kotei Peter Rechem Mahu. Suppose the fetus is expelled through a massive effort on the part of the mother that creates such a muscular opening of the cervix that there was never any contact between the actual vlad that just popped out through a wide opening and never had to push against the surface of the actual cervix. What about a case like that? Is the avirechem mekadesh? What's the point over here? Going through the opening of the womb, is that what you mean when you say peterechem? Or do you mean forcing open the womb, by pushing against it? Again, the question is, how literal is the meaning of peterechem? And how do we look at it as just a way of talking about birth? So with the actual avir, the airspace of the rechem, that the child never comes in contact with, Is that enough to be Kaddish the Bechor? That is enough, then, and over here the Bechor would be Kodesh. Oh, Dilma Nigiat Rechem, Mikatsha. Maybe it needs to actually be pushing against the Rechem to open it up in order to be a Peter Rechem, an opener of the womb. And you don't have that. Boy Mar Baravashi got another question. What if there was such trauma that the Kotli Beit HaRechem had actually been ripped off, so that what you have over here is now an opening that no longer has the cervix there? It's been actually ripped off, and you've got a severely damaged animal. Would that be considered to be a Peter Rechem? Necru, what do you mean necru? If there's necru, they're not there. I mean, how is there a Peter Rechem? Basically, what you did is you cut open the mother and you took out the child. And there's no such Peter Rechem then. I don't mean that. I mean that it was necru v'tolulei b'tzavare. What happened over here is that the area of the neck where the cervix actually had been cut off and is now stuck around the neck of the actual fetus. That's the question. So is that considered to be their Mekadesh, but they're only Mekadesh when they're where they belong, b'mekoma Mekache? Or do we say you can actually create a Peter Rechem by having the opposite, where the Rechem goes around the head of the Uber, and then the Uber comes out? I mean, would that be called Peter Rechem? Shalom b'mekoma, maybe are not Mekache. Even Shalom b'mekoma are Mekache. Another question I have. Suppose the surface of the Beit HaRechem was nigmam. So it had actually been pulled away. It was peeled, same lotion that we had before when Latrefus. Well, but if it was nigmamu kotle Beit HaRechem, what would be the din there? Ah, says Reb Zera to Reb Yirmiyah, now you are nogea in a question that I raised together with my friends, and you can actually find the resolution by following our logic. Here's what we brought up. To buy Rabbi Zera, or some say Rabbi Zera asked Rabasi, if you have a case where the omeid is meruba ala parutz, v'yatsa derech parutz, so now you've got some of the tissue that's around the cervix has been taken off, but mostly it's still there. Now, the thing is that the fetus only came into contact with the area that was actually still intact. So the fetus was yotze derech omeid. That's the second case. Or if it was the fetus came out through the part that was missing, but most of it was there. Or if the parutz was the rove, but the fetus went through the part that still has its proper muscular cover and the skin that covers that, what would be the din there? What? What does that have to do with what Rabbi Yirmiyah asked? I don't get it. What did you say? You can resolve it by listening to us. Yes, because look, you see over here that the entire discussion that Rabbi Zera had over here with Rabasi was only Atkan lo yibayle ala parutz meruba ala omeid. The only question was raised where you still had some of the tissue left, and you had a parutz that was meruba, that was a meruba. So the question is, at least there is some of the Beit HaRechem that's intact. So the ika omeid ba'olam. But you see that nobody ever considered your case where it was nigmamu and actually the tissue had been rubbed away across the entire cervix. Nigmamu lokomi barley. Nobody ever asked from that. So it's clear that if it was mamish nigmam, there's no way that this would be kaddish bechayra. And therefore, that's why I said, if you look at the way we understood it, then you'll see that the answer to your question, which brings us to our very chilly Capitan this morning, having just piloted this massive ferry through a complex archipelago, and he's really tired, but he's still going to give us
Zog der heilige Mishnah.
He's been practicing his foghorn as well. There's a lot of fog sometimes there.
A lot of fog.
Do you have a fairy godmother?
I'm thinking something, but I'm too tired now to even think about it.
Behema shemet ubra. Betoch me'eh. You can remute, Rich.
Yeah.
Behema shemet ubra. Betoch me'eh. So now we've got a dead fetus. The farmer or the shepherd puts his hand into the womb, and he was trying to pull it out, and he touches it. Now the question is, does he become tummy by touching a dead fetus? Is that considered to be a nevela that's metameim under these circumstances? The din is, according to the Tanakhama, whether we're talking about a kosher or a non-kosher animal, that farmer or that ro'eh is tahor. Even though a nevela is metame, in this case, it would not be metame. We'll see what the reason would be in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, a surprising psak. If the animal that we're talking about over here is a little piggy, let's say, and it's a behema tmeya, then it would be metame and benevela. If it's a behema tohora, it would not be metame and benevela. Now, this is the only case in Kol HaTorah Kula where you can use the word Torah or Tmeah in both of its meanings simultaneously. Because if it's Tmeah in the sense of a non-kosher animal, then it would be Metamehim. And if it's Torah in the sense of a kosher animal, it would not be Metamehim. Which is very strange, because the dinim of Tumas Nevela are exactly the same whether you're talking about a behemah tmei or a behemah tahora. And this is a real conundrum. What in the world would Rav Yossi Aglili be basing this on? Now, the closest we can get to a case like this where we could conflate the meanings of the tamei atar is nivlas ov tahor, right? But that is where the ov is tahor, then the swallowing is tamei. Okay, I mean, the nivlas of tamei is totally tamei even ben negia, so it's not really similar to this case. So let's take a look at, first of all, why would the Tanakhama say that if it's inside and he touched it inside, it's not going to be metameim? Why would it not be metameim? How do you explain that? Isn't it a nevela? My taima, the Tanakhama. Omer of Chista. It's because of a kal v'chomer. This is Rav Chista's kal v'chomer that we're going to be referring to later on in the sugya, so remember it, that this is what we mean. Kal v'chomer. Im ho'ila imo la'tiro be'achila. So what's the din over here? The mother, if that mother had been shechted while this animal, which is dead, and this animal would have been in the womb of the mother dead. What's the din? Well, we learned before behema, ba behema, even if it's a cut-up embryo, it's still going to be kosher to eat. Because, remarkably, the Torah is saying that anything, as long as it's not part of the mother, anything that is found in its womb, dead or alive, pieces or whole, is considered to be kosher because of the pasuk of behema, ba behema. That's what we learned before, right? So it says Rav Chista, look, that means that we've got a crazy situation that the womb of the mother essentially is sufficient to allow this dead animal to be mutter ba'achila if it was shechted. So isn't, you don't think that that same womb is going to prevent the dead animal if you didn't shecht it? It's alive. So koshikin, it's enough to prevent it from being a nevela, right? And it's not going to be batami as a nevela. Because if I went around and shechted it now, it would be kosher to eat. So how could it possibly not be enough to prevent the tumas nevela on it? I mean, it makes no sense. Well, wait. That's in the very nice svara, but it only works if the animal is kosher. I mean, if the animal isn't kosher, then obviously the shechita of the mother is not going to do anything to make it kosher to eat. I mean, if you shecht a mother piggy with a little piggy in it, you're not going to be able to eat the piggy. So how do you explain the fact that according to the Mishnah over here, the Tanakhama, there's no difference between a Behemoth Tahora or a Behemoth Tamea? It's only Rabbi Yossi Aglili that makes that difference. So this is not a good enough Kal Vachomer to explain the Tanakhama. Ashkechan Behemoth Tahora. But where would you get the din that the same thing would be true about a Behemoth Tamea? Now this already makes us think for a moment. Wait a minute. So in other words, the Kal Vachomer of Rav Chisda might help for us to understand Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Well, we may get back to that when we examine Rabbi Yossi Aglili's Svara. Brucey, you still there? Sometimes it can take it out of you guys. I don't know. All right, so look, what would be the basis for saying that a dead animal that is not kosher, that is touched by the ro'eh who's trying to deliver this fetus or is checking up to see whether it's alive or dead, and he touches it, it's dead. What would be the basis of saying that it is not metameim, even if we're talking about a horse and he's trying to deliver the horse in the stable? It's still not going to be metameim. Why? Omar Kro. So it turns out that we actually have a completely different basis for this, not the Kal Vachomer of Rav Chisda, which would not cover horses. So Omar Kro, since the way that we find in the Pasuk, V'chiyamut mina behima asher hi lachem lo ochla, hanogea benivlata yitma ad ha'arev. So what we have over here is two separate behemoth. V'chiyamut mina behima, that's any kind of behema. That refers to a behema tmeya in contrast to and or asher hi lachem lo ochla. So whether it's a yamut min ha-behema, which is not kosher, or asher hi lachem lo'ochla, which is kosher, so that's how we understand it. The first part of the pasuk, v'chi yamut min ha-behema zo behema t'meya. Then when it continues to say asher hi lachem lo'ochla, in contrast, that is the behema Torah, which means that in this pasuk, the dinim of the nevela of the behema t'meya and the behema tahora are compared to each other. Which tells me that matkish behema tmeya la behema tahora. If a behema tahora, we just learned out before, through the Kal Vachomer of Rav Chisda, indeed, that the din of a behema tahora is that it is going to remain tahor in the womb because of the Kal Vachomer. If the mother is going to be matrit b'achila through its shechita, kol shekein, even though it's cut up, kol shekein, it's going to prevent it from being matame b'nevela while it's alive. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. So you said yes, but it does not apply to horses. But here the Torah makes a specific hekesh of the horse in the stable to the din of the parah in the field, and it's exactly the same. Just like a behemoth Torah, we've established that Ubra is tar through Rav Chisda's Kal Vachomer, af behemoth Tamea. Now the pasuk is adding that a behemoth Tamea also is Ubra tahor. Okay, great. So now I understand it. Basis of the Hekesh, everything is fine. What would be Rabbi Yossi HaGalili's basis for ignoring a Hekesh? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili, why does he say that there's a difference between a horse and a kosher animal? So first I understand, okay, like we said, Rav Chisda's Kal Vachomer only covered kosher animals, it didn't cover horses. But what about the Hekesh? Is Rabbi Yossi denying the Hekesh? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili, my time up. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, it's because since we have completely different pasuk that discusses something very different, because it says v'chol holech al kapav v'chol hachaya holechet. Now look what we have over here in the same parsha: anything that walks on paws, it doesn't walk on hoofs. So it's chol holech al kapav b'chol hachaya. So in other words, let's say you find something that is walking on paws inside of a chaya, haholechet al arba, a chaya that has four legs, tmeim heim lachem, and kol hanogeh benivlatam yitma ad ha'arev. Now, what is this pasuk all about? So that is what Rabbi Yossi Aglili understands as saying, that if you have a mahalche kapayim, something that is walking on its paws, so you've got something like a cat, and it's walking on kapayim inside of any living chaya. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a dead fetus of a non-kosher type of thing. It says, Yitma kol hanogeh benivlatam, Yitma ad ha'arev, tmeim heim lachem. So this is a special pasuk that is adding, Tainus Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that in the event that you have something inside of a chaya that is not kosher, then I'm telling you right now that it is tamei, and you should not accept the hekesh in terms of this halacha. There's a difference between the tumas and the veles of a herlech al kapav and a tumas and the veles of a kosher animal, which we learned from Rav Chisda is kosher. Wait, that's the marker? So let me ask you something. What about a case where you have a mutation? So we said, if you have a mutated fetus that has an improperly separated hooves, right? Okay, these are the kind of things that happen in processes that end up either closing a gap or opening a full gap before it's finished. So these are the kind of malfunctionings and that create a cleft palate, let's say, on the one hand, or will create an uncleft hoof in another case, in another species. So these are the same genetic malfunctions where we have a mutation that doesn't complete the separation of the hooves. Now, that was called the kalut bime'ei para. We said before that a kalut bime'ei para that is found inside of the cow is considered to be kosher. And even Rabbi Shimon was made that if it was shechted in the mother, that it's kosher, and he doesn't care about the fact that normally he would view this mutation as a non-kosher animal, right? Okay, so why, according to what you just said, why wouldn't that pasuk that you claim Rabbi Yossi Aglili was darshaning, it would actually tell you that a mutation like that would be tamei? Nobody said it was tamei before. So how are you going to include this pasuk and yet not include the kolot b'mei para? Oh, no, wait a second. Did you read what the pasuk said correctly? What the pasuk said is mahalche kapayim b'mahalche arba. It says, anything that's mahalich al kapav b'kol chaya olechet al arba. Arba means four hooves. How many hooves are there in a kosher mother? Eight. Because each one of those feet have two hooves, right? And that gives you eight. So then that means that we're only talking about the non-kosher animal in a mother of non-kosher. It only has four hooves. But we were talking about a kolot b'mei para. A kolot b'mei para is a mahalche kapayim b'mei mahalche shmona, not mahalche arba. And the pasuk went out of its way to specify four hooves, not eight hooves. That means that a kolot b'mei para is still kosher even based on this pasuk, because hi, mahalche arba b'mahalche shmona. This is a mahalik ha-kapav inside of a mother with eight hooves. Okay, so I got another question for you. Suppose you have a mutated camel, all right? A camel, which has only four hooves, a camel has a vlad that looks like a cow, okay? And that cow has perfectly formed hooves, if it would be a cow. Unfortunately, it's a camel, and therefore it's a mutation. But the bottom line is that that actually ought to be not metame, because it is a Mahalche Shemona inside of a Mahalche Arba, and the Pusik only said, the Kol Holech Al Kapav, and that means Kapav is that it only has one hoof, so to speak, on each foot. So why does Rabbi Yossi say that if the animal is not kosher, camel, not kosher, thank you. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, what's the din? You touch that fetus, your tummy. Why? The only pusuk that he had to tell him that it's tummy was where it would be a holech al kapav. But this is not holech al kapav. This mutated camel has 8 feet, so to speak, because it's got fully formed hooves. So why did Rav Yossi say any animal that's tummy is going to be metame? According to the pusuk that he has, it doesn't cover this case. Well, it does, because it adds, it doesn't say holech al kapav, it says v'chol holech al kapav, and that's to include even this case, to include a mutated pora that is in a camel's womb. So rabot pora bime'e gamal. Okay, fancy adjustments over here. So I got another question for you, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, okay? If the basis of the pasuk is Rabbi Yitzchak Drosha over here, what about if you end up with a kolot bime'e kiluta? Okay? So now you've got a mother that was also kluta, and the child is kluta, so both mother and child were mutations. So the mother, Pora, only has 4 feet, so to speak, because it doesn't have the 8 hooves. And the fetus only has 4 feet. Oh, boy. So now we've got a Mahalche Arba, Betoch Mahalche Harba, and that should be Tameh, according to Rabbi Yitzchak's Pasuk. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, if it's inside of the Rechem of a kosher animal, then it will not be Metameyu. But Rabbi Yitzchak's Drosha would have it be Metameyu. So how could Rabbi Yitzchak's drosha be the basis of Rabbi Yossi Aglili when Rabbi Yossi Aglili says beferish that it will not be metame because it's a min tahor? So obviously Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk doesn't fit the bill. Ah, but you forget. We still have the kal v'chomer of Rav Chisda to fall back on. We never said that the kal v'chomer of Rav Chisda was no good. All we were doing was looking for why we don't hold up the Hekesh. That's why I mentioned to you before. Remember the kal v'chomer of Rav Chisda in context of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, because we're still going to use it. And what do we use it for? Exactly this case. If the mother is metayer, the uber, when it's betoch me'el through her shechita, then kol sheken, she should be metayer mide nevela while she is alive. Sounds great. Problem is that Rav Achtavoy Barami found a crack in the argument. What's the crack? How about a little piggy? What's the difference? Ah, it's a big difference, because little piggies do have 8 feet, and piggies' mommies have 8 feet, and they're not Mahalche Arba, betoch Mahalche Arba. That's what's special about piggies, is they're always showing off their extra split hooves, right? Virtue signaling, pure Esav from beginning to end. So therefore, what about this case? Maskifar Vachtavoy Barami, how about a dead pig inside of a pig's mother or so? And it should not be metame, because this is an eight-footed creature, and the pasuk only said four-footed in four-footed. So I'd explain that. A mahalche shmona, the mahalche shmona should be also tahor, and Rabbi Yossi said any non-kosher animal. He didn't say piggies are different than horses, did he? He said any time that you have a mintame, that mintame will be mitame the farmer who's dealing with the birth of its dead fetus. Ay, 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 we have to give up on the entire limit of Rav Yitzchak because of that and find another basis. Whew. After all we put in to adjust every single case, we have to give up? No, what can you do? When the MS must speak, we must move on. Ella Amar of Nachum Bar Yitzchak. I suggest an entirely new moker for Rabbi Yossi Aglieli. It comes from this pasuk. Nefesh asher tiga b'chol davar tameh. O benivlat chayat meya. O benivlat beimat meya. O benivlat sheretz tameh. Okay, so this is a fascinating case. This was the case of someone who was metameh migdash v'kedayshav, and he went ahead v'ashem. It doesn't say what he did, but we define from elsewhere, as we'll see, he was a chokachem, or he was nichlas l'migdash, right? Okay, so he is tameh, and for some reason, the pasuk tells us what made him tameh. So he touched either nivlat chayat meyah, nivlat beimat meyah, or nivlat sheretz tameh. So what does this make sense? Is there a case where only the niv... This is a brilliant drasha. It's really amazing. It's a crazy pasuk. The nevela of a behemah tameh, it's metameh. But the nevela of a behemah torah is not metameh. If we're listing the way that the person became tameh and then he was ashamed, why are we talking about a behemah tameh? It's exactly the same. It should just say, he was nogea b'chol nevela. There's no difference between the nevela of a horse or the nevela of a cow when it comes to the tumas nevelas that's going to answer him to go into the Beis HaMikdash, is there? So why does the pasuk sit around talking about a complete non-issue? Ha! Says Rabbi Yossi Aglieli. Obviously, it is an issue. And there is a place where only the nevela of a non-kosher species will be metame. Isn't that brilliant? And where is that? That's the case of the uber. So the uber of a behemah tameah, an only behemah tameah, will be metame. And that's why the pasuk left out the case of the nevela of the behemah taora. Amazing drasha. Ela eza zeh. Ze ubar, that is metame only in a tame species, and is not metame benevela if it is a tar species. Absolutely amazing. A pasuk that has been bothering us since we first talked about the carbon olive of Yoreid in Zvachim. My gosh. I mean, it might have bothered people who read the holy book, but for those who only learn Gemara, it's been bothering you since Zvachim at least, right? So, okay. So what in the world is the meaning of this pasuk? We finally see a possible meaning in Reb Yossi Aglieli. So wait a second. If the pasuk is basically what we just learned from Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, the pasuk openly declares that there's a difference between a kosher species and a non-kosher species. So then how did we understand Reb Yitzchak? What was the point of Rabbi Yitzchak's drasha? It doesn't teach us a darn thing. Because, I mean, look, it was obvious the drasha of Rabbi Yitzchak left us open to the case of the little piggy, and it's not going to be able to deal with the realities. So why did he bring it? What was the point of his drasha if it couldn't possibly have covered the cases? Because if it wouldn't have been for Rabbi Yitzchak, I would have said that Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak's pasuk is coming for a completely different purpose, a purpose that we are going to see tomorrow, which is what Rebbe learns from that pasuk. Therefore, Kamash Malan, once we know from Reb Yitzchak that the din is that a nevela that has only parasot, and a tzolich hakapav is a nevela, then we can understand that Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak is saying that this is true of any type of uber, of a non-kosher tamei, and this pasuk, only a nevela of a min tamei. Okay, I'll have to stop over here. And I guess we'll do this together with figuring out what that Rebbe was. Whew. Anyway, a lot of fascinating new issues over here. Many of them b'nogea b'ikar, the dinim of b'chereis, but at least we have an understanding of what the complications are in appreciating a peter rechet, and what a Petarechem is, going all the way from the super mechanical and having no connection to the poetic element of birth to the pure poetry of birth, which just means a firstborn. And we've got our opening machlokes about whether a Petarechem is a process or whether it's a point, the machlokes between Ravuna and Rabba. And then we've had all of this last incredible nekuda of what is the din of a nevela. Well, we know the din of a nevela benogea achila is that, surprisingly, it's kosher in a kosher species, if you shech the mother. And we end up finding out that, according to the Tanakhama, we have a hekesh that tells us that this is true even of a non-kosher species. So we got into three different makaris, balancing them out with each other to determine whether this din of the kashrus of a nevela inside of a mother, and talking about all of the various possibilities of mutations, whether the mother is mutated, the child is mutated, the arba parasot actually are of a species that has shmona, but in the particular cases arba, we went through all of those fascinating cases, plus a bunch of laboratory thought experiments about nutty situations of actually delivering a bechor in cuckoo ways. We are still in the middle of the sugya, of the interrelationship of a din of behema tmeya. It's a fascinating sugya. Din of behema tmeya, meaning a non-kosher animal, and its impact on its tuma, its literal tuma, which is a reference to a case where you have a uber that is dead inside of a living mother. And the question is, the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Rabbonan Alibi Rabbi Yossi Aglili, there's a fundamental difference between a kosher animal and an unkosher animal. And that's because we had a number of different bases, but basically we saw indications in the Torah that there is a difference between a case, a particular case of nevela, and that must be the case of the nevela betoch, its aim. So where it comes to the kosher animal, we have a kal v'chomer that if the shechita is mater, if the mother shechita is mater, and even if it's in pieces in her womb, then the living mother should certainly prevent a tumas nevelas if the shechted mother creates an actual heter achila. So this was the machlokas that we had, and it turned out that we had a lot of different sukkim, some of which leave out Chaya, and some of which make a distinction between the Behima Tumeya, seems to make a distinction, only mentions Behima Tumeya. So let's take a look at more of this today, because we have a beautiful discussion that Rabbi Yonatan reports between himself and Ben Azai. So this rate lines up to the bottom. Namti lo Omar Rabbi Yonatan, this is a bright Tanya. Omar Rabbi Yonatan, Namti lo Ben Azai. You know, I mentioned to Ben Azai, Lamadnu nivlat behema tahora shemitama. Look, I understand we have all of the basic data. I know all of this. A nevela v'chaya tmeya is certainly metama because, I mean, that was Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak's pasuk, which he mentioned before, which was in the middle of the sugya of the korban ola v'yored. So in the Ola V'Yored, one of the cases of the Ola V'Yored, of course, as you'll recall from Zvachim, was where someone became Tamei, and he went into the Beis HaMikdash, or he ate Kodesh, Betumas HaGuf. Anyway, the Lashon of the Pasuk over there was, O Nefesh Asher Tiga, Bechol Devar Tamei, O Benivlat Chayat Meya, O Benivlat Behimat Meya, Obenivlat Sheretz Tameh. So that says Beferish, if somebody touches the nevela of a Chaya Tameh, that he would be Tameh. Okay, so that's a given to me. Now, I also know that there's a din of Nivlat Chaya Tahora. Of a Chaya and Beima, but I don't know where it says anywhere a Nivlat Chaya Tahora. So it doesn't say that. It leaves that out. There's no pasuk that says that. Where do we get that from? Minayin. So Ben Azai told me, what do you mean, Minayin? Remember, we were talking yesterday in the Daf Yomi, the pasuk that we understood to mean, a reference to the case where you have a mutation that has four legs instead of eight legs, meaning hooves, and it was the Holech al Kapav. So that pasuk of Kol Holech al Kapav b'chol achaya ha'olechet, what I take it to mean is what every naive reader takes it to mean. It doesn't mean one chaya inside of another chaya. It means any type of chaya, b'chol achaya, any type of chaya that walks on four. So if it walks on paws or it walks on four hooves that are co-joined, that is a description of a chaya tamea, because it says b'kol hachaya ha'olechet. So what's your question about over there, where it's coming to tell me, even in a case that you touch the nevela, so what it's talking about over there is that you will be tamei as it ends, you'll be tamei ad ha'erev, and that means that any chaya, where it adds the kol hachaya, so I understand the basic pasuk to be referring to anything that is a chaya at all, and kol hachaya includes also the other pasuk of, we are now between the two pesukim, we have the kol hachaya as a reference to any type of chaya at all. No, I said to him, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't say kol chaya, it says bichol hachaya, which of course was the way we understood it yesterday. Bichol hachaya doesn't mean in all types of chayot, whether they're tomei or tahar. It means inside of another chaya. And it was referring to the cases that we spoke about yesterday where you may have a mutation of a four-hoofed animal inside of a chaya. And that was that whole beautiful lima that we mentioned of Rabbi Yitzchak yesterday. And now this was all of a sudden, you're using it outside of its context. It doesn't say the chol chaya. It says v'alolo nemara bichol chaya, which is the way we learned it, and that's the reasonable way to understand it. So how can you use that pasuk to tell me what you're learning? I need it to tell me l'mahalchi chapayim, a case where you have a mutation of something that is heilich only on its kapayim and inside of a chaya that it is considered to be also pasuk. So Benazai was pretty shocked by that because never thought of that. Bichol HaChaya, he just thought in all of the classifications of things that are called Chaya, right? But actually, he said, so what would your Rebbe, my friend Yishmael, which was a reference to Rebbe Yishmael, what would he have to say about this? I'm sure you're trying to trap me here to tell me some grape shot of your Rebbe, huh? All right, so what did he say? Umay Yishmael Omer Badavaraza. What does Yishmael, my friend, say about this? So I said to him, says Rabbi Yonatan, what Rabbi Yishmael said was, V'chiyamut min habehima asher hilachem la'okhla, is the pasuk. So these are two different references. One is min habehima, and one is asher hilachem la'okhla. The asher hilachem la'okhla means that the first mention of the behima itself was a behema tmeya, and then asher hilachem la'okhla is talking about the behema tohara. That means that the pasuk puts these two together. So v'chi yamut min habehema zo behema tmeya, asher hilachem la'okhla zo behema tohara. So then what it says is, if you touch either of them, so what's the halacha in either of these cases? The halacha is that it's tmeya hilacha, yitmaa ta'arev, it says, kolonogea b'nivlata. So if that's the case, we now know that both of them are tamei. Now, since, and this is what he taught us, that it's really very straightforward. So if you touch either the nevela of a behema tmeya or a behema tahora, since we also know from other places, which I'll show you in a moment, that wherever it says behema, it includes chaya. The Torah makes that very clear elsewhere, as I'm going to show you in a moment. So lamadu chaya b'chol behema. And the Torah also makes clear in other places that wherever we mention the word chaya, it includes behema. So we know that chaya is included in behema, and we know that behema is included in the word chaya. So therefore, it's given that chaya Torah, Bichlal Behema Tohora,
Chayat me'ah, b'chlal behemat me'ah, behemat me'ah, b'chlal chayat me'ah, and behemat Torah, b'chlal chayat Torah. So now, there's all of your answers. If the Torah considers any mention of chaya to incorporate behemah, and any mention of behemah to incorporate chaya, and we know that it says beferish that whether you're talking about a behemah to behemah, or to behemah Torah, shirei lechem la'ochla, in either case, you're going to be tamei ad ha'arav if you touch the nevela. So now we know exactly the same dinim are true about the chaya as well. That's your answer. I don't know what you're making things so complicated for, my Rebbe said. And all of a sudden, Ben Azai changed his attitude, because until now, he was sort of being a little cynical. So what's my friend Yishmael have to say about this? All of a sudden, he says, oy vey, my friend Yishmael is really Rebbe Yishmael. Chaval that I didn't learn by him. Chaval al Ben Azai. Shaloshi meshet Rebbe Yishmael. What a terrible thing that happened to my life that I didn't end up learning by him. That is something. So this, whenever Ben Azai says Chaval al Ben Azai, so I shouldn't say whenever, but Rashi explains Chaval, a beautiful Lashon. What does Chaval al Ben Azai mean? So Rashi explains some places that Chaval al Ben Azai means it's a Chavalah to the reality of the world that such a thing should have. That's not Chaval. There's damage to the structure of the universe, is what he said. It's not personal. Can you imagine that this should have played out in a real world, that Ben Azai never was Mishamish Rabbi Yishmael? What a disaster.